Welcome to the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. We have two guests on our 17th episode, which will look back at Sunday's fabulous finish at Dover International Speedway and ahead to the Sprint All-Star Race at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Leading us off is the defending winner of the Sprint All-Star Race. That's Denny Hamlin. If he can defend his $1 million All-Star Race crown this weekend, Denny will be doing so under far different circumstances. Last year, he was the third straight winner to lead every lap in the final 10-lap segment. Mindful of that, NASCAR has made significant changes to the race format to inject some drama into this year's edition. The final segment now will feature a quasi-inversion in which the top 9 to 11 cars will be forced to make pit stops and start behind 8 cars that finished 12th through 20th in the first segment. So that could make for a very interesting strategy wrinkle and throw open the possibility that sandbagging, gasp, might come into play given the tire wear at Charlotte in recent years. So we asked Denny for his opinion on that, as well as his thoughts on the new aero rules in play. Denny has been among the leaders of the Sprint Cup Drivers Council the past year, and he has some great insight into why drivers want to slow down the cars in the corners, why breaking records is bad for racing, and how NASCAR and the industry have been so much more collaborative in trying to get to a better place and improve the on-track action. Also, stay tuned for some good nuggets from Denny on designing his car for Daytona. That's a reward from his sponsor FedEx for winning the Daytona 500. He's getting to actually design what it's going to look when that car goes back in July for the first NBC broadcast of the season. And Denny also talks about how he empathized with Kyle Larson after his runner-up finish at Dover. Denny has a very similar story from his rookie season going for his first Sprint Cup win. The plight of Kyle Larson is also the topic with our second guest, Dustin Long, my colleague from NBCSports.com/NASCAR. Dustin covered the moral choices that Larson had to make at Dover and the potential repercussions of those in his weekly Upon Further Review column that runs every Monday on NBCSports.com. We'll delve into how finishing second still might help Larson in the long run, whether he was influenced by the Joey Logano-Matt Kenseth feud, and what his chances are now of making the playoffs. As always, we appreciate you listening. Please leave a rating or review on iTunes or send me feedback on Twitter, @NateRyan, about the show. Whether it's guest suggestions or format ideas, I'm always interested. So without further ado, here are our conversations with Denny and Dustin. All right, thanks for joining us, Denny. I want to get started by your thoughts on the All-Star Race format. Obviously, radically different than past years. When it was a 10-lap dash to the finish. This year, not only will it be a 13-lap dash, but also a quasi-inversion with the top 9, 10, or 11 cars having to pit for a mandatory 4-tire stop. How do you think that will change the strategy? Do you think, will there almost be possibly a race for 12th after the second segment? How do you think it'll change things for drivers?
It could be. I'm assured that there's going to be games played one way or another. Whether it's the correct game, I don't know. I mean, as long as it took you to explain the race and the format, that's how long it's going to take. There's crew chiefs, I'm sure, writing down all kinds of different scenarios in which they are going to think about where they want to be at a certain time. So it's interesting. It'll see how it all plays out. We don't know yet until we get on the racetrack, but I'm personally looking forward to obviously the rule change with what NASCAR's came out with this morning and an effort to try to slow our cars down just a little bit more still. So that's going to make for better racing, and obviously hopefully tires mean enough that whoever does take tires and comes out with the lead off pit road has a chance to make it back up front in those 13 laps.
Yeah, certainly the last 3 years with the winner, yourself being the most recent, leading the final 10 laps, it does seem as if tire wear hasn't been as much of a factor, certainly on that repaved Charlotte Motor Speedway surface. At Kansas, the last mile and a half race, your teammate Kyle Busch won on older tires when he didn't pit over the final 56 laps. Is that indicative, do you think, of how Charlotte could go? Or do you think, as you said, that putting the good cars toward the back with fresh tires will it be different?
It's a crapshoot at this point. I think that there's been three races that have been, not quite when it comes to tire wear. or fall off what we're looking for. You know, Vegas is a tough one. We were running essentially faster in the corners there than what we were last year. Kansas, we were running still some pretty hefty speeds at that race, as well as Dover. Dover turned out to be a great race at the end, which is really good. But we're seeing track position start to rear its head again, where track position is starting to be king. But I think that NASCAR's seeing that and making an effort to give us some good racing by changing these rear-end housings to slow the cars down. So I think that Charlotte, it just kind of depends on the tire, to be honest with you. If it's a tire that has fall off from the beginning of the run to the end, you're going to be one of the guys. You're going to want to be on pit road getting tires. But if it isn't, you could see a lot of games played trying to be up front after that draw.
How much do you want to be involved in that strategy, Denny? I know usually drivers just want to leave that up to the crew chiefs. They don't want to know so much about four tires, two tires, when they're going to pit. In this case, do drivers almost need to be involved more for those first two segments as you guys figure out where you want to be to start the final one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that will be some of it for sure. I'm a percentages and odds guy, so I like to look at trends and look at tire fall off, and really you want to put yourself in statistically the best chance to be either on the front row, or you want to be on the first two with tires. That's going to be your best shot to win. Is going to be one of those two options. So there's four positions in my mind that I feel like you want to be in. It's just a matter of which one is the correct one. It's going to be key, and you got to have a car that's fast enough to do it too. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but for sure there'll be some calculations and drivers thinking about things as the race is going on.
The other thing you mentioned, Denny, obviously, is that the aerodynamic tweaks that NASCAR is making for this weekend in three areas, with the fans, with the skew, and with the trailing arms. How do you, I guess, one, if you could just walk us through what those changes will be like from your perspective as a driver, and two, do you think that they'll reduce downforce and side force enough to have an impact on the racing?
Yeah, I think it'll slow the speeds down for sure. I think, back to the days before we had, cambered and towed rear end housings and skew in the car, it definitely, this is going to straighten the cars out. So the wake behind shouldn't be quite as big as what it is, even though the spoiler size stays the same. And I think economically it's probably the best option for the race teams. Essentially, they're taking things off the car instead of putting pieces, parts and pieces on the car that can cost money. So this is just an effort to kind of, let's just see where this takes us. And this is a, just a 100-lap race where we can get a sense of, what kind of racing we could expect if this rule were to ever be put in place permanently. So I like the idea of using it as an exhibition to try some things, and hopefully it comes out with some success.
Could it make the difference, Denny, where a move like you made at Kansas, which was certainly an impressive one, just didn't really work out, I think, because of that side force issue? Could it change the game as it relates to a move like that and allow for more aggressive racing?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we want as drivers, is an opportunity to make sometimes a bold and dumb move. I mean, we don't mind, if the person in front of us has to lift for an extended period of time or has to use brake getting into the corner, it gives the person behind him an opportunity to drive in there and get up beside him or do something to put himself in a position to pass them. If we're essentially all just running a lot of on-throttle time, how does the person behind ever get in front of the person in front of him if he's wide open all the time? So slowing the cars down gives us an opportunity to take chances, and obviously gives us a chance to put on a better race for the fans.
I think I saw somewhere, Denny, that it's expected to reduce corner speeds by about 6 miles an hour. And I know last year, I think corner speeds were up by like 8 miles an hour. And that was met with a lot of complaints from you guys about not having that stability that you seek. Where do you think the balance though is in terms of speed reduction, not making them so slow it's not a spectacle from the grandstands, or so slow they're not too easy to drive? Is there a number you guys as the drivers and the driver council, being a member of that you might have in mind for reducing corner speeds?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of depends on each racetrack is different. I think from my own personal opinion, maybe not of all the council, is, you know, I have a number in mind of probably 15 to 20 miles per hour that eventually I'd like to see us get to. I remember seeing some really packed stands in 2006 and 7 when we were running 15, 20 miles an hour slower. So I think from the fans' standpoint, they want to see great side-by-side racing. They want to see drivers make mistakes every now and then and pay the price, and this gives us an opportunity to do that. Ultimately, the faster we go, even though it looks great putting up track records are bad for racing. So the slower that we can go, listen, I'm all for going 250 at the end of the straightaway as long as we're back to 150 in the center of the corner. So, you know, that variance in speed from center of the corner to the end of straightaway, is that's what we're trying to separate. And if we can do that, the fans are going to continue to see great racing like they saw this weekend.
Now, obviously, you and other drivers have some strong, well-thought-out opinions on this, and NASCAR has listened, and that's led to the collaboration in the changes, not just for this weekend, but for 2016. Going forward, 2017, how much further do you think they should go? I know, you know, Carl Edwards is advocating just cut the spoiler off entirely and reduce downforce as much as possible. How much further would you like to see them go?
Yeah, I mean, as drivers, even though we think we have a great opinion about what they should change, the parts and the pieces, ultimately we don't know. It's the race teams and their engineers and NASCAR that knows best of what's the most economical way to slow the cars down. That's what they're starting to figure out now. They're doing tons of tests to try to do that. And just to let everyone know, they're doing that for the fans. We're doing this to try to put on better races and more exciting racing. So I think that us, all we need to do is set out a goal and say, hey, we're trying to get us to here. However you get us there, it doesn't matter, just as long as we get here. And whether it be with spoiler or underbody or side force or whatever it may be, we're all for the change. And obviously this all comes as – it's all got to work together with a tire that works as well. And those elements between the downforce and the tire – is what dictates great racing versus okay racing.
The All-Star Race, of course, is a night race. Night race is usually all about paint schemes. And I know you've got a special one planned for Sonoma, Denny, that you're letting fans pick through voting this week at FedEx Twitter, or you can go to the FedEx Facebook page to vote. Do you have any preference of the three that are being offered? And also, just curious, how much input do you get generally on paint schemes? Do you work with JGR and FedEx on choosing those?
I like to have a lot of influence, and actually as a gift from FedEx to me, they're going to let me design my own car for the July Daytona race. It's kind of a thank you for the whole Daytona 500 victory thing. Okay. So that'll be cool to have, you know, I have a blank sheet of paper and put anything on the car that I want. So that's really cool of them to let me do that. But, you know, I've done a lot of different cool charity things and giving back to the community with FedEx in the past. But this is one that the fans can influence, and that's our paint scheme at Sonoma in June. They can go to their either Twitter handle or Facebook page and vote on one of three paint schemes. I personally like the first one. I like simple lines is usually the best. But if they go there and they vote, for each vote that they see, they're going to donate $1 to one of the five charities that is going to be on the car. So encourage fans to go there and vote. That's just more money to great charities. And not only that, but FedEx has pledged over the next 4 years, $200 million to different 200 different communities. So that's a big number from a company that obviously cares a lot about the communities in the U.S.
There's certainly some worthy efforts on their part, and obviously a great company that's letting a driver design his own paint scheme. What are you leaning toward for Daytona in July? Do you have any ideas yet?
I'm working on it. I don't know exactly what I want to do yet, but want to definitely make it my own for sure. So I'm working with designers now on trying to get what's envisioned in my head out there on paper.
Gotcha. Just a couple more for you, Denny. Obviously, we talked about the Driver Council. You've been a part of that since its inception and a pretty influential member of it as well. We focus a lot on the competition from that aspect and everything that's being done to improve the racing in working with NASCAR. But I know that NASCAR also brings in marketing and PR initiatives and strategies into those meetings to put in front of you guys. What's one thing that might surprise people that's been discussed over the past year in those meetings that's come out of it?
I don't know that anything's really a surprise. I mean, I think that, you know, we want to have a lot of influence on safety and competition because those are the things that we live out on the racetrack every single Sunday. However, what we get educated on in those meetings is the bigger picture, you know, the marketing side of things and why it's important for us to do this and that and different obligations that we have that maybe we don't always have the answers to. So I think that, you know, even though NASCAR does a great job of giving us a voice in a lot of these areas that we want a voice, they also do a good job of also informing us and educating us on a bigger landscape of why this direction is better than, say, that direction. So I think it's the educational part of it has been really good. I've you know, communications is better than I've ever seen it. And obviously, what it's doing is creating great racing on the track. And this year, some of the finishes has been really good to see. And obviously, we're just trying to strive to make that even better for the fans that watch every Sunday.
What's one example, Denny, of something maybe that they show you and say, this is the reason we're doing it? Would it be, say, social media, like, hey, this is why we're doing a live story on Snapchat versus another direction or something like that?
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, the media outlets and the marketing side of things. And, you know, even though you think you're talking to one group, it gets spread out through so many different channels of media and fans. So, you know, you can't just measure, you know, I struggle every week with, you know, reading, well, ratings are this or ratings are that, but we have such a huge impact with our NASCAR races on social media and Snapchat, and, you know, it gets spread so many different ways that you don't even realize, and so I think our sport is as healthy as it's ever been, and I look forward to seeing, you know, where it's going in the future.
All right, one more for you, Denny. Obviously, a lot of the talk today was the Dover race and the thrilling finish between your teammate Matt Kenseth and Kyle Larson. I know you're probably going to be biased on this, but I'll just put you on the spot. If you're Kyle Larson, do you have regrets about not taking out a guy a day later for a win? Have you ever been in that situation where you could have taken a guy out and gotten a victory and then thought the next day, man, maybe I should have done something about it?
Oh, absolutely. For me, I was searching for my first win, not only, you know, at a track like Dover, which Kyle's really got no connection to, but it was Richmond for me, my rookie season.
Right.
And unfortunately, I mean, fortunately for him, it was Dale Jr., which is a good friend of mine. And I remember being right on his bumper with two laps to go thinking, I can get my first win right here in my home track. And I chose not to move him out of the way because he's probably part of some of the reason that I got the ride that I got. So lucky for him, unfortunate for me, but yeah, that one haunted me for quite a while, and I'm sure it will for Kyle as well. But I mean, he got right on Matt and definitely got him up the racetrack. So, I'm not sure what else he could have done. I think, you know, I watched the race back last night and I was like, you know, really what hurt Kyle was when Chase got up in there and was mixing things up and he was trying to, race for the win as well. I think it just kind of it let Matt get away just far enough to where Kyle didn't have quite enough time to get around him. So I know as watching it last night, I was, you know, on the edge of my seat, you know, couldn't believe some of the racing that was going on up there. So it was fun to watch.
Yeah, it's probably a lot easier for us to sit here and judge, oh, you could have done this or done that. But at a high bank track like Dover, I'm sure it's trickier than it seems.
No doubt.
All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you making so much time, Denny. I know your time is tight, and we appreciate you being on the podcast. Thanks for being here.
All right. Appreciate it.
Okay. Joined now by my NBCSports.com/NASCAR colleague, Dustin Long, who, as always, on Mondays, has the Upon Further Review column, which he writes for our site. And today, the lead to that Upon Further Review for Dover was the decision that Kyle Larson had to make at the end of yesterday's race. Matt Kenseth wins the race, but certainly a lot of attention on the runner-up, Dustin. Kyle Larson electing probably not to play rough, I think is a fair way to phrase it. I think he did everything in his power to try to win that race, but I'm sure there's going to be some second thoughts about should he have laid the fender more to Matt Kenseth. So your column certainly laid out that this was a moral decision on many fronts, and what it might mean, you know, going forward, and what it might have meant in that moment. But let's start with this. Do you think Kyle Larson did the right thing? Let's start with the easy question.
Wow, let's get. You know, I'll tell you, there's a couple things. There's multiple layers to this. Let me try to break some of this down. I think one thing that's interesting about this is that we're even having this discussion when we're talking about a race on a mile track where the speeds are, 160 miles per hour or so. I mean, you know, it's one thing that the rule has kind of been, you know, it's okay to do it on a short track. But as we've, and even the road courses, but as we've seen, especially last year with the contact at Kansas at the end of the race between Joey Logano and Matt Kenseth, we've seen some contact at some other races. Was it the Truex hit the wall after, you know, an incident with Joey Logano at Auto Club, I think it was this year. So we've seen some contact, on these bigger tracks for positions, for the Kansas case, it was with Logano and Kenseth. It was in the final laps for the lead. So I think in one sense, it's interesting we're even debating this because I think years ago, that I don't know if it would have been as much of an issue because the gentleman's agreement or, you know, the unwritten rule was that, you know, you did the bump and run on the short tracks, but you didn't do it at the big tracks. So I think that's an interesting element unto itself is that we're just having this discussion about it at a track where the speeds are up, where, I mean, you know, look at some of those accidents from this weekend, and, you know, you get a car turned. I mean, just look at how violently Carl Edwards hit the wall. And again, that was some contact with Kyle Larson. And you know, there's another thing you can debate whether he was patient enough there, or maybe that made him more patient with Matt Kenseth. But ultimately, the question is, did he make the right move? I think Matt Kenseth will cut him a break in the future, but what does that mean, and how will that help him? I know our colleague Jeff Burton likes to say that how you do things on the track, what you're doing to one driver, you're essentially doing to the whole field. I'm kind of paraphrasing, in the sense the field saw what Kyle Larson, you know, how he treated Matt Kenseth. That being said, if I'm a competitor going against Kyle Larson the next time for the win, and I've got him behind me, I might take advantage of that and might try to force his hand, feeling like, you know what, in this game of chicken, I'm going to make him blink first and I'm going to win the race. So in that sense, does it help him? It does with Matt, maybe. Does it help him for the down the road? I don't know. Would it have helped him if had he wrecked Kenseth and shown everybody, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the young gun generation, and by God, you know, we're coming in, we're fast, we're taking over, and get in line, old guys. So, I don't know. I think it's an interesting. I think the true answer to this we'll see down the road, and I think that's why it's hard to answer that question right now, because I think there's two different ways it can go. But it'll be interesting to see what happens when he's in the situation again, and it'll be interesting to see if he has an opportunity to win a race, or was this his one shot to win a race to make sure he gets in the chase.
I understand, Dustin, when you say that it is a hindsight type analysis, that perhaps it's better served and seeing like where things stand in September, and does he make the playoffs, and obviously if he makes the playoffs, there's probably far fewer regrets than if he somehow misses it by, say, a point, and this is the victory that might have gotten him into racing for the championship. But I think the counterpoint to that is, why should any of that matter if the goal is to win? I mean, you mentioned the young guns, the youthful drivers these days, that generation. I mean, certainly Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski, teammates at Team Penske, have carried the banner for all we're here to do is win. And if it ruffles feathers, if it makes veterans angry, then good, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be making them feel uncomfortable and worried about their place in the establishment, because we are challenging them for wins. And do you think when Kyle Larson hears Matt Kenseth after the race congratulate him and say, he raced clean. He did things exactly the way he's supposed to do. Do you think like he takes that as, oh, that's great, a veteran is praising me, or do you think it's almost maybe indirectly salt in the wounds of that guy's praising me for not winning the race? He's basically praising me for allowing him to win. How do you think all that boils down?
Well, and you're right about, you know, Keselowski and Logano and just how it's all about winning. But also remember, that attitude, while it's gotten Logano many wins, I think you can make the argument that it cost him a championship last year, because he already had that win at Kansas. You know, and again, I know Kansas was blocking him, and at some point you've got to say, look, we're done with this game. But obviously, you know, he was patient to a point, and then let the contact happen, and Kenseth got upset about it. And so a couple of races later, Kenseth, you know, knocks Logano out of the lead late in the race at Martinsville, and it looked like, you know, Logano's going to win that race and be able to advance to the championship round in Miami. And I think many people would have had tabbed Logano as the favorite to win in Miami. And so I think you can say that attitude, while it's gotten Logano plenty of wins, I think you can make the argument it cost him the championship, or at least the opportunity for a championship. So, you know, when Kyle Larson hears this, you know, I think you look at it, well, here's the guy that took it out on Logano and tried to set it straight last year. You know, if it's me, I appreciate the praise to some degree, because I still got to race these guys week after week after week. And, you know, at some point there's got to be a give and take. But I also know that, boy, I've come so close, I've been waiting so long, and when's the win going to come? And, you know, even any type of praise like that, it is going to be salt in the wound. Right. And it's going to hurt me. Like I said, I think the interesting thing was, for all the pressure that's been on Kyle Larson, for all the expectations that we've put on, and the fans, the media, and everybody else have put on Kyle Larson, you know, he's the next great, you know, here's the next Jeff Gordon. Here's the next, you know, pick your driver. And, you know, 87 races in one sense, okay, maybe it doesn't seem like a big number, but we're talking about, you know, everybody was expecting to win when he came in as a rookie in 2014, and he hasn't won yet. And it's just like, it's not all him. You have to look at that team and that organization, and they've gone through some struggles, and they've got to pick themselves back up. But at some point, you know, it just gets frustrating. It's one thing to be there, it's another thing to win. And he, you know, for as nice of a guy as he is, and I think he generally comes off as a very nice guy, I think at the end of the day, he's there to win. And so I think there's that frustration. And so, you know, you hear Matt Kenseth, you make those comments, you appreciate it, but you also know that Matt Kenseth is making those comments after being in victory lane, and that's where you want to be, and that's where you should be at some point.
Right. And I think it's interesting that of all the drivers he could have been racing for a win and to be facing this conundrum, it's the guy, Matt Kenseth, who, when you talk about rivalries and paybacks, and when you talk about like the driver code, no one was more at the heart of that debate last year than Matt Kenseth. And of course, that was after Joey Logano spun him to win at Kansas Speedway. And 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, Matt Kenseth, while nine laps down, intentionally wrecks Joey Logano and essentially takes him out of the championship, as you mentioned. Do you think that factored into Kyle Larson's thinking as the laps tick down at Dover? I'll tell you that I do. I think that made a difference. And I'm not saying that Larson doesn't make that move because he thinks that there's payback coming, because I don't think Matt Kenseth is going to, you know, reach for those types of repercussions anytime soon, perhaps the rest of his NASCAR career. But I do think that Kenseth represents, again, that veteran, that establishment, that veteran guard, as you mentioned, Jeff Burton on NASCAR America saying that everybody watches how guys race each other. And I think Larson was mindful of the way other drivers took what Kenseth did last year and how they interpreted that and how they perceived Logano in the aftermath. Did all of that, do you think, factor into the decisions that Larson made in the final 30 laps at Dover?
I mean, I'll tell you what, frankly, you know, if I'm a driver, I think the way I view it, one way I view it is, all right, here's the guy that took it out on Logano, but NASCAR sat his rear down for two races. So he's already on a short leash. So use him up.
Right.
Use him up.
Right.
I mean, again, it goes back to, if I'm a competitor and I'm racing against you, Nate, maybe we're best friends, maybe we're not, but I'm going to look at everything I can do to beat you. And if I see you, like Larson, racing Kenseth cleanly and making your move, racing clean, but then, backing off, well, maybe I think, hey, there's a weakness. If I can get him to that point, I know he's not going to cross the line. That said, maybe he's also, you also hear these drivers talk about, look, it's easy to wreck somebody for the lead. It's harder to make the pass. And, is Kyle Larson in that sense, not that guys were so much cleaner in the old days, but is he an old school racer and he kind of follows that code more? Again, and I know that back in the day they still wrecked each other and this and that. Like I said, I like it. I'm trying to get any advantage I can. I think at that point when he was, I think Larson had his hands full with the car, just as Kenseth had his hands full. And you have to remember Larson was having to worry about Chase Elliott for part of the time. And once he got away from him, he's trying to chase down Kenseth. And you're wondering if he had enough time. And he starts closing. And it's like, okay, he's getting closer now. Now how are you going to make the pass? I think he had so much going on in just the moment. I think it's kind of hard to think, okay, here's the guy that was involved in the Logano thing. And NASCAR sat him down after he reacted.
Right.
Let's go use him up type of thing. I think Larson's doing everything in his mind humanly possible he can to win the race. And for his part, there was a line. He wasn't going to cross it. He was not going to have his first win, potentially sullied by wrecking the leader. I'm trying to think, wasn't it our colleague, Brian Vickers, our NBC colleague, Brian Vickers, his first win was Talladega.
Right.
Wasn't it?
It was.
Where he had the contact with Johnson that also wrecked Junior. And while what should have been this great moment for Brian, and I'm sure he still looked back in some ways that it was a great one that he won, there are all those questions about, he was third, the contact wrecked the leaders, and there was as much talk about that day as opposed to this great story of this former, essentially Xfinity Series champion working his way up and winning his first cup race in the sprint couple of, in one sense, it would have been a shame if Larson had to go through that. But again, those are the choices we make. And when we're in those extreme moments of the line's there, are we going to cross it? What are we going to do to get that victory? And again, this may be a great thing that helps him down the road. Or again, it goes back to the question I asked. Although there's 14 races left in the regular season, what if this was his only chance to win? To win a race, to get in the chase. I mean, he's still 43 points out of a last chase spot as of now, just to try to get in on point.
Yeah.
And you also have to think about just of the 14 races, was it 9 of them were won last year by Gibbs cars, and the Gibbs cars, don't seem to be losing a whole lot of speed. And while the Ganassi cars maybe have gotten better, they've still got a ways to go. At least it looked like to be a regular contender for the win week after week.
Yeah, and if every point matters, as you said, Dustin, and Vickers and Logano, it's certainly fair to say that they were treated and viewed differently, I think, by peers after both of the decisions they made to win races there. As you said, that's the breaks that comes with it. That's understood. But if every point matters, backing away from whether or not Kyle Larson viewed Matt Kenseth as the ultimate arbiter of NASCAR ethics or something like that. But if he's just looking at it from the perspective of, hey, I might need every position possible over the remainder of the season. As you said, Ganassi hasn't been up to snuff so much for much of the first half of the regular season. Can the decision he made Sunday help him in that guys might cut him breaks on the track, and maybe he gets enough breaks cut to him because guys saw how he raced Kenseth cleanly and said, I'm going to race him cleanly back. Maybe that adds up into enough top 15s or top 20s or top 10s or wherever the positions may be that earn him that spot in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is everybody races everybody. You want to race everybody the same. But again, if I'm, if we're competitors and okay, you're Kenseth and I'm Larson in this scenario, and you beat me at Dover and I race you clean and everybody looks at that. Well, that's all well and done. But who's to say that, you know, maybe when I've been running elsewhere throughout the field at times against Kyle Larson, Kyle and I have banged off each other's doors and we haven't liked what each other's done to each other. So just because I showed I was going to be clean to you and how I raced at the end, you know, there could be several other drivers in the field elsewhere, scattered throughout the field, that I've had incidences with, or they've had incidences with me, and we don't see eye to eye. So just because I reacted one way in the front of the field, doesn't mean that I'm going to be treated, you know, respected and given the kid glove treatment, and given a free pass. For some people, it won't make a difference. I mean, I'm sure if, you know, it would be interesting. You know, I know Carl Edwards was appreciative of being told that Larson had apologized for the contact, but, you know, I think Carl Edwards' opinion of Kyle Larson matters more on what happened between them with about, what, in the last 50 laps, as opposed to what happened between Larson and Kenseth. So I think it's an individual thing, and I think we look at it, media fans, observers, and say, oh, well, he raced Kenseth clean, so everybody's going to pay attention to it. And I think Jeff Burton does have a point, don't get me wrong, because I think you notice those things, you look at those things, and that's part of compiling the book you have on each driver. But I also would say that if that driver has wronged me four times, then just because he raced somebody else clean for the lead doesn't mean that I necessarily, at least in my mind, would wipe the slate clean.
Right.
And if I feel like I owe him a couple, then, you know, the next time I'm not running well and he's running well, man, my car's going to get wide. It's as simple as that. And he's going to have to work. And you know what? If he burns his tires up trying to get around me, I really don't care.
Right. Talk about something else that may have made a difference that we may not be thinking of. And some of our media brethren, Dustin, brought it to light today. I hadn't thought about it. There was the Battle of the Beach 3 years ago at Daytona, where Kyle Larson spun a competitor on the last lap of a late model race to win, and he was unapologetic about it, particularly on Twitter. He said, I'm here to win. I'm not going to apologize for winning, and I think he took a lot of flack on social media and got booed a lot. Jeff Gluck noted that it seemed like it was a different driver yesterday versus 3 years ago, and I know Jenna Fryer with the Associated Press has talked to Kyle Larson. And she said that she has seen that did affect him. What are you to make of that? That a late model race and the reaction for just spinning somebody going for a win could have an impact maybe on how a driver might race in the Sprint Cup Series 3 years ago. What's your take on that, Dustin?
I think everybody wants to be liked and nobody wants to be hated.
Yeah.
And I think even if you look at a guy like Tony Stewart, for as macho of a guy as he is, there was a point in his career when it hurt him to hear the boos. Now, I think Tony has, you know, he's grown through that and he's learned to accept that. Doesn't mean you still like it. And again, some guys maybe learn to kind of embrace that role a little bit more, you know, the Bush brothers to some degree. But I think if you ask both of them, if you said, hey, do you like being the villain 24/7 nonstop? I think if they were being honest, they would say no. I mean, at some point you do want to hear the cheers. You don't want to always be the bad guy every single day of every single moment. And that was, I would suspect, the first time that Kyle heard it on such a big level. Because it was at Daytona. There were more people there. You had social media, so more people could comment. It was on TV. I mean, look, a lot of the great things that Larson's done on tracks, but, you know, coming up to the NASCAR ranks, hey, it was in front of a small crowd of only a few thousand that night there. It wasn't in front of a national television audience or, you know, somebody from, you know, up in Oregon who can watch it on TV and then get on Twitter and get your name and rip you a new one on Twitter for something because they didn't see it in years past. So I think it was eye-opening in that sense. And I think it would be eye-opening for anybody just that first time when you get booed or get a lot of the fans are disgruntled for something that you did. And I think it's eye opening. You learn from it. You would hope that Kyle is his own person. He's going to race his own way and not let people, what they say, determine how he's going to race, whether he raced clean because he got so much flack 3 years ago, but that he raced clean because that's what he felt, that's his core beliefs, and he's like, this is the way I want it to be done.
Right. Started with a tough question. We're going to end with one as well. Kyle Larson finishes second at Dover, but he's still 21st in points. And in the five races prior to that, his best finish had been 14th. He's only got three top tens this season. 14 races left in the regular season, Dustin. Can Kyle Larson still make the chase? Any way possible, I guess. Victory through points. Do you see this team turning it around in the second half to make it?
Well, I mean, he can because there's still enough time. I think the question is, will he? And my question is, I mean, you look at the four Gibbs cars, or essentially the five Gibbs cars, you want to include Furniture Row with Truex. I mean, there's five strong cars there. Harvick's fast. There's six strong cars. Chase Elliott's been really good. There's seven strong cars. Jimmy Johnson is very good. There's eight strong cars. All right, so right there, just offhand, he's got to beat almost those eight cars most weeks, because most of those cars are up toward the front most weeks. And when some of those aren't, somebody else slides into that role. So are they good enough to do that right now? And I'm not sure that they are. Dover is a good track for him. And I think it's his best track based on average finish. So in one sense, it wasn't surprising that he ran well, even though he struggled early in the race Sunday. He's got some of his better tracks coming up, but again, it's kind of stilted in the sense of, some of these tracks he's only run two times. So it's when you look at statistically, it's kind of hard to kind of really, plot it out because it's such a short number of events that he's been in. But I mean, he's been good at Indianapolis. I mean, I think he's got an average finish of eighth or ninth there. But again, all right, you think, okay, Ganassi cars can do well there. We've seen Montoya barely win there. But we also know that that's a place where the Hendrick cars are incredibly strong. And we know, Kyle Busch won with Gibbs last year, and the Gibbs cars have gotten stronger. It's got the horsepower, so that ought to help them along straightaway. So it's like, all right, well, okay, is he going to do it there? All right, well, then you look at, Watkins Glen is another strong place for him. And you look at some of the other guys that have been strong on the road course. Is he good enough to beat those guys? Can he put himself in that position? So, if everything falls right, I mean, he can win. I mean, there's only been seven winners this year, and it'll be interesting to see what happens as the season progresses. Are we going to get more winners, or is it just going to be a case of it's going to be a different Joe Gibbs Racing driver in victory lane every week? I mean, they've already won seven of the first 12. If they continue that, then points are going to matter more, and you're going to have to be smarter about it. And I think what will be interesting to see is how that team plots its strategy. How much of a gamble will they take for some races? Or will they say, we need the points, and we're not going to make this gamble for the win because we've got to have the points, because if we make this gamble and lose, we just put ourselves further in a hole. So I think it'll be interesting to see what Chad Johnson, as crew chief, does. I think at this point, still look for wins, but when it comes down to that last stop or whether to stop at the end or not, it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do.
Yeah, it certainly bears watching through the end of the season, and I'll just throw my two cents out there. I think this is going to be one he is going to regret. I don't see that team getting to the playoffs, barring a breakthrough win. I think it's going to be really difficult to do on points, so I fear that come September, 4 months from now, he could be looking back at Dover with a lot of regret. But certainly that race held our rapt attention, Dustin, and even though we weren't in Dover, we will be there at Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend for the All-Star race. Before we wrap up, any thoughts on our coverage or things to expect this week?
Well, what I expect this week is I'm going to have to go to the tattoo parlor and tattoo all the different rule changes on my arm so I can keep up with everything, the format changes and all sorts of other rule changes for this weekend. So, I mean, it's always a busy time, so there'll be plenty of stuff on the site and you will be out at different locations. I'll be out at different locations this week and the next coming week. So there's a lot out there for sure, and we'll be there.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that and seeing your new tattoos as well. As always, thanks for joining the podcast, Dustin. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Thanks, man.
Our thanks to Denny Hamlin and Dustin Long for joining us on the NASCAR on ABC podcast. This edition and the past 16 episodes are available on Stitcher. You also can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes for automatic downloads of new episodes. And it also is available at www.nbcsports.com/NASCAR, as well as the rest of our daily content. We'll be back with more episodes next week with Memorial Day weekend ahead. You can expect a mix of IndyCar and NASCAR to come. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR on NBC podcast.